Well, everybody, welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Emhauser. You can find me all over the place, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, at Hawk Blogger. And I'm back in the Pacific Northwest. I'm even wearing the hat to prove it. Looking out at rainy, not too bad rain right now, but about to be pretty rainy, Seattle. And happy to be here. I think I got sick again, which is just what I always do when I make these trips. But really excited to be hanging out with you all today. And I've got all sorts of things to talk to you about. A lot of things on my mind. Finn is dying to come say hello. So I'm going to get Finn up here for a sec, at least. He certainly doesn't like when I go away for too long, but we're back. Before I get into all that, there's news. So I'll start there. Before I get into that, make sure you give the show a like, click subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. Always do. We're closing in on 30,000 subs. I think we're only like 700 away or so. And as soon as we get to 30,000 subs, I will be giving away tickets to the very next Seahawks game, whatever game that is. So let's get it done. Like, let's get it done right away. Maybe I'll be able to give away tickets to that Rams game. That would be cool. So maybe the Colts game, depending on how it's going. But like, let's get this done. Appreciate everyone that's already subscribed. And for everyone that's a fan of Finn, I will let you know a little inside secret. His actual name is F-I-N. I dropped the last N. So if you want to be a true insider, just know that the proper spelling of Finn's name is one N. Now, autocorrect does not agree with me. My wife does not agree with me, but I named him, so I get to decide. So in case you're curious, but let's start with the news. The news that I think is probably most pertinent for the Seahawks is what's going on with the Colts, who's their next opponent. Well, obviously, we'll talk about the Falcons game. I've got a lot of thoughts. We'll cover all that. But the Colts, if you have not heard, for some reason, they lost their starting quarterback. Daniel Jones is out for the season with an Achilles injury. They lost him yesterday in the game. Then Riley Leonard, who is a rookie quarterback out of Notre Dame, he also apparently might be out for this game. He has a knee injury that is giving him trouble, so he is questionable for this game. And beyond that, Charvarius Ward, their best of the cornerbacks that they have left, is in the concussion protocol. If you didn't know that Sauce Gardner is already in on IR, now you do. So that would be Sauce Gardner and Charvarius Ward both out for this game. And maybe be looking at a guy like Brett Rypien would be their practice squad quarterback that they would play in this game. So what started as a 3.5-point Seahawks favorite game, before this weekend, is now up to a 12.5-point spread. 12.5 points. So as it stands right now, that is an equal spread to the 49ers who are hosting the Titans. So the way betting is going on right now, people are ending up with the Seahawks being as much of a difference between them and the Colts, the still 8-5 Colts, as the difference between the 9-4 49ers hosting the 2-11 Titans. The only other spread that is, there's a couple spreads that are this large this week. Let's get to these. I was kind of curious about this. The Eagles are 12.5-point favorites over the Raiders. And the Jaguars are 12.5-point favorites. The now 9-4 Jaguars. That one's looking a little bit better, isn't it? No, the 9-4 Jaguars are 12.5-point favorites over the Jets at home. So there is no one that is a bigger favorite than the Seahawks now over the Colts. Now, why does this matter beyond a win's a win and you need as many of these you can get? As you know, the Seahawks are going into a brutal four-game stretch where it looked like, every team they're going to play or is going to play has a winning record. Beyond that, they're going to go into a four-day stretch, where they're going to play a Sunday home game against the Colts and then have to turn around and play a Thursday home game against the Rams. Well, as it stands, it was looking like the Seahawks were going to have a really hard-fought game against the Colts. The Rams were going to have a hard-fought game against the Lions. And then both teams were going to have to do their best to recover for what might decide the division in Seattle. Now the Seahawks hopefully will have a lot more comfort in winning this game. And if they are able to do what they have now done so many times and just run away from inferior competition, there's a chance that they could rest players in this game. And that would be a massive, massive advantage for a game against the Rams on Thursday. So this has big implications. It absolutely does. It is a break for the Seahawks in this way. And they had a break in terms of, you know, Michael Penix didn't play. They played Kirk Cousins, which I don't think is, I think they're roughly equivalent in terms of productivity. I talked to you about that last week. Then the week before, you got Max Brosmer instead of JJ McCarthy. People are making that seem like this crazy thing. Well, I mean, yes, Brosmer was very, very bad. I don't think McCarthy has been that much better, although he did play well yesterday. In any event, the Seahawks have been playing poor competition of late, have been beating up on it as they have all year. And it looks like they're going to have some significant advantages this week. I'll do my tail of the tape. We'll break it all down and get into more depth. The Colts are not a team to just ignore and think it's going to be easy. No team is. But I think that that's a pretty big aspect to this. I also think that this has some other meta meaning to, for those that care about this stuff, which is that Jonathan Taylor's chances for offensive player of the year are plummeting. JSN's are skyrocketing. You know, having a team just kind of, I think there's a decent chance the Colts are going to miss the playoffs and lose out the rest of their games. I think their offense is going to struggle. Jonathan, you know, Taylor's going to do everything he can and they'll utilize him a lot. But I think JSN's odds are going up quite a bit. I also think it has some implications on things like exec of the year, which I'm sure none of you really care about, but I'm certainly interested in that for John Schneider, who's never won it. And the Colts, I think, were one of the teams that was probably most primed for, you know, competing for that award. And so I think if the Colts end up finishing, you know, what would it be, like 9-8? I don't think that they'll probably win that award either. So anyway, these are things that come to my mind. Maybe you care, maybe you don't. But those are a couple pieces there. Other bits here. Let me think if there's any other news before we get into kind of reacting to the game. I think those are the major things of news. Let's talk about the Seahawks. Let's talk about the Seahawks proper and not just things that are happening in and around them. I wrote my morning after column, which is always available on hawkblogger.com. So if you haven't read it, I highly encourage you to do so. It's free. You know, it's just fun. But I wrote it on the flight home. And I found myself, there's a few storylines in there, threads that I was kind of pulling on. And we'll talk about probably all of them. But the thing that really is getting me right now is this team just won 37-9 on the road in a 10 a.m. game against a team that has a good defense, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL, one of the second highest blitz rate after the Vikings. Their offense scored 30 points. Their special teams was great. They had one turnover, but they took away three. And their defense is looking not only like great, it's looking better and better. Like, I don't know what goes above great, but they're heading there. And yet, I can feel it. I can feel the hesitation among the fan base. Not everybody. And I'm guessing a lot of folks that are tuning in here don't fall in this category. But this city has not fallen in love with this team yet. They're not infatuated with this team. They're not obsessed with this team. It's just not happening yet. And even folks that are super into the Seahawks, friends I've got that follow the team very closely, they are still protecting their hearts. They don't believe in Sam Darnold. That is what it really comes down to. They don't believe in Sam Darnold. And I think I understand it. I understand the hesitation about Sam Darnold. I was there front row for what he did in LA and how catastrophic that was. And that the season was at a crescendo point and it came crashing down right there. I saw the whole thing. So I haven't forgotten it. But it is interesting to me how reticent people are to get behind this team anyway. Because if you go around and you look at every team in the NFC and in the NFL, I mean, heck, like, did you watch the Chiefs play the Texans last night? Chiefs are probably not going to make the playoffs. They're certainly, like, the amount of flaws they have on that team are staggering. And they have the best quarterback, I think, in the league. Maybe people still think that's controversial. I don't. And they might miss the playoffs because they've got so many other flaws. You go to a Broncos team that has a really good record. I think they're first seed in the AFC right now. Excellent defense. Are you telling me you really believe in Bo Nix more than you believe in Sam Darnold? There's some people that probably would say yes, which I think is wild. Where's Bo Nix right now in terms of some of the pertinent numbers here? I'm going to pull this up. Where is he? He's hiding from me. The Broncos. There we go. I admit, I haven't looked at Bo Nix's numbers recently. I'm very curious. Bo Nix, lower completion rate, lower yards, almost 4 yards less per throw. 19 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. He's got 2 fewer interceptions than Sam Darnold. Sacked 16 times behind the best offensive line in football. That's really not even up for debate. And has an 86.4 rating, passer rating. Let's look at QBR just for giggles. QBR is the ESPN quarterback metric. Where does Bo Nix rank? 17th. He has a 55.7 QBR. Sam Darnold is 8th at 64.5. So it's just another example of a defense-oriented team that has a very good offensive line, good pass protection, but has a quarterback that has been atrocious at times this year. I think some of his lowlights are worse than Darnold's lowlights by far, and he does not have the highlights that Darnold does. You take it to the NFC. How do you think Eagles fans truly feel about the way things are going with their offense? The fact that Nick Sirianni is going in there and getting involved with the offensive game planning, and we'll see how it goes tonight. But Jalen Hurts and that pass game has been very inconsistent. Their run game has not been anywhere close to what it was last year. Their defense, as good as it is, Jalen Carter's out with shoulder treatments on both shoulders and has not been the same player, and their pass rush has not been the same. There's a ton of flaws on that team. The Packers, who I think are at least gaining some ground, they took everything from the Bears, you know, that the Bears could dish out, and their ability to defend the run is in question. Their ability to be consistent on offense is in question. And I think they're getting pretty good quarterback play right now, sometimes very good. But Jordan Love hasn't done anything more impressive in the playoffs than Sam Darnold has. He just hasn't. He has a lot to prove there as well. So does that Packers coaching staff. I mean, I can keep going. The 49ers, you think the 49ers have fewer flaws or fewer serious flaws than the Seahawks? I mean, they're dead last in the NFL in sack rate and pressure rate. You think that's going to go over well in the playoffs? Like, I respect what Robert Saleh's done and all that. So I kind of like the Lions, you know, I could keep going on. Every single team has one or more things that are meaningful question marks about how they're going to hold up. The difference with some of them is that the jersey has done it and some of the players have done it, right? The Eagles just won the Super Bowl last year, so they get the benefit of the doubt. And I understand that. The coaching staff has gotten them there. Matthew Stafford has won a Super Bowl. I think the Rams are the one team where I won't sit there and like say, yeah, look at this major weakness. The Rams don't have a major weakness. I don't think they really have a major question mark. I think the Rams are a team that their biggest fear is the Seahawks, to be really frank about it. Maybe the Eagles, since they always find a way to lose to the Eagles, but that's why the Rams, I think, deserve to be the favorite. I think that's fair. I'm a homer. I'm not super objective, but I'm not afraid to kind of acknowledge that stuff. And so I just look at this and I'm like, man, if nothing else, it would just be such a shame to have a season like this go by and spend the whole time holding back because you're worried that you're going to get let down. I mean, the reality is 99.9% of Seahawks seasons, any pro sports season, is going to end with a loss. That's just like the reality of us being obsessed. And so I'll admit, I'm not like counting on the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl. I'm counting on them making the playoffs. I'm counting on them winning a playoff game. Honestly, I would like to see them prove that I'd like to see them get back to the NFC Championship. Like, that would be a really big step. But part of the reason I'm harping on this, and I saw some of the comments, I think someone said, I feel like, what did this say? I feel like my dad's scolding us for not being supportive of the Hawks. That's not my intent. This is not judgment. I'm reacting to what I'm hearing and seeing out there. And some of this is just comes down to the fact that, like, I mean, just, I mean, we all know it. Like, there's a lot of shitty things that go on throughout the day that are either boring or bad throughout the year, throughout the month, whatever it is. Like, there aren't a lot of things that you generally can like attach to that are just fun. And I am concerned about two things. One, about the people that are going to miss the chance to really ride the roller coaster with this team, which honestly has not been much of a roller coaster. It's just been kind of a steady climb for the most part. But also, this team needs the fans. Like, it needs, they're not going to get where they need to go without the advantage of the home field the way it's been in the past. And I'm not talking about the way it's been this year. I'm talking about the way it was years ago. It's going to need people, even the casuals, right? They get affected by how many people in the region are talking about the Seahawks and excited about the Seahawks and how much they're going to cheer. And so I want the atmosphere to be electric for this team. And I want that to increase their odds of getting where we all want them to go. And maybe this does absolutely nothing to affect any of that, but it bums me out a little bit. It does. It bums me out when I'm excited about the team and what I get back is kind of like, I sure hope they can do this, or I hope they can beat this team. And it's like, yeah, I mean, we didn't go into 49ers games back in 2013 knowing that we were going to win those games. We just didn't. We hoped that they would win there, but it didn't stop us from being like all the way in. So I won't belabor the point any longer, but that for me is, it really has been on my mind. And it's a very weird, unique season for this team, like overachieving on defense, overachieving on offense, overachieving at quarterback, by the way, overachieving in offensive line, which has been a bugaboo forever and like a wish list item forever. I think overachieving in terms of the rookie class, in terms of personality, Ernest Jones, Nicky Minwori, Devin Witherspoon, Gray Zabel, JSN's got some of that, EJ Barner, like the grades are like straight A's. But fan engagement, like it is like I'm paying attention, but it's kind of your deal, whatever happens here. I'm not really invested fully. And that's really one of the first times I've ever experienced something like this. So that's part of why it's on my mind. I'm going to see some of the super chats because I'm guessing people have thoughts to share. This is not the only thing I'll be talking about, but that was one of the things off the jump I wanted to share. Seahawks man, who's been a member for 9 months, says, saw my first ever Hawks game against the Vikings a week ago. I loved my time in Seattle. Such an amazing city. Could the Rams lose to the Hawks and the Lions? You know, I don't know. First of all, I'm really happy that you had a great time. That's great to hear. And I'm glad you love the city. Not everybody does. Let me take a look at any news on the Lions. Okay, the Lions, they released a receiver from their practice squad and they signed someone. Dan Campbell said that Christian Mahogany, their starting guard, will try to get back into practice this week. That does not necessarily mean he will play. Miles Frazier had his debut. I did not know that. I want to check that out. I'm a big Miles Frazier guy in this draft. I'm looking to find out if we can see anything about Kirby Joseph, because losing Brian Branch and let's see. Sorry, I'm just going to take a quick look here. Yeah, Kirby Joseph. Anyway, losing Brian Branch and losing Terrion Arnold in their secondary, I mean, kind of good luck. But I am curious if they were going to get him back. I'm not seeing it so far. Maybe he's already back. But that would be one thing that would be of benefit there. In general, I mean, the Rams are going to beat the Lions. I don't think that Lions team can stand up to that Rams team. Now, the biggest hope there is that the Lions are kind of fighting for their playoff lives. And so you're going to get the best that they have to offer. And Jahmyr Gibbs is a great player. And David Montgomery is a hardy player. And, you know, if they can get their offensive line a little bit back in working for them, you know, maybe. But that defense, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm looking right now. Ooh, Miles Frazier did not have a good debut, at least from a PFF perspective. He had a 23.2 grade. Yikes. So not a great debut for him. But I do think it's possible. I just don't think it's likely. So the Rams are really, really good. I'm not going to twist that. They are very, very good. I just happen to think the Seahawks are good enough to beat them. Brian Henderson, who has been a member for 16 months, amazing, says Anthony Bradford has gotten better, but it seems like when he fails, it's a really bad fail. Any truth to this, or am I off on this thought? Great last game though. Yeah, his lowlights are so bad, they are making people thousands and thousands of dollars. Like, he has become just the absolute honey bucket for any content creator who wants to get engagement. It's like, man, he looks really silly. There's actually a snap against the Falcons. I was going through all of his pass block snaps like I do, unlike a lot of these folks. And someone stepped on his foot and he fell over. I mean, it wasn't like it was his fault, but it looked pretty silly. And I'm guaranteed we're going to see someone put it up on Twitter or TikTok. Oh, Anthony Bradford looks like an idiot again and won't show all the other snaps. And people will continue to misunderstand my position on Anthony Bradford, which is not that I think Anthony Bradford's a Pro Bowler or the best player or even league average. Well, I would say he might be close to league average. I think that my position is the state of guard play in the NFL is atrocious. You would be shocked if you watched the worst player on the offensive line for every team in this league instead of just the one that happens to be the worst one on your offensive line. And that if you can do better, if Christian Haynes somehow is better, if Jalen Sundell, who, by the way, that's part of the news I forgot to bring up, he is eligible to come off the IR this week. If the team decides that they want to try him at right guard and keep Olu at center, like I'm trusting of this team. I think it's a risk, but like, okay. But generally speaking, I think he's your best bet. And I think he is, I don't think he's close to the worst player in the NFL, as many people want to say. I don't think he's close to the worst offensive lineman in the NFL. But I do believe that he's got some really bad tape out there. So, yeah, I think you're probably also referring to, I shared some numbers that he has been steadily improving his pass blocking, at least by PFF. And the funny thing, and I see our friend, the troll in chat, always talking about him being 72nd out of 77 or whatever it is, guards in PFF grade. But when the same thing says, well, since week 9, he's actually the 23rd best guard in the NFL, that just goes away. Like, it's like, oh, well, PFF doesn't matter then. So the goalposts are always moving. I'm not moving the goalposts. If you look at PFF, he is improving from a pass protection standpoint. If you pay attention to the coaching staff chooses him every week. This is the same coaching staff that has led the biggest turnaround of this offensive line in over a decade. Brian Baldinger, Brandon Thorne, offensive line guys have shown some really, really impressive stuff. They're the only ones courageous enough to do that. So I think if the 2013 team had all of the social media that we have now, the TikTok, the short clip stuff, J.R. Sweezy would be absolutely roasted. Like, every bit as bad as Anthony Bradford from a low light tape. That guy had so many quick losses at right guard. People do not remember. And I see the troll saying, I ignore PFF grades when I don't like them. I don't. I would say I literally shared that he had an 18 grade the first 9 weeks. I would say you are ignoring what you don't like. I'm sharing all of it. Like, I'm not hiding from any of it. If all you ever say is he's the worst player because of this, but you're not willing to talk about any improvement, I think you're kind of telling on yourself, to be honest. And in the end of the day, what I want is the best player at right guard possible. And if they put Sundell in there or Christian Haynes and he's better, I'm going to be all for it. We'll see. We'll see if that happens. That's enough on Anthony Bradford. Ed Chan has gifted 12 Hawk Blogger memberships. Appreciate you, Ed. Thank you for the generosity. I know you've done this before. And get one of these Hawk Blogger memberships for free. Make sure you have gifting turned on in your account. And, consider giving a free membership to somebody else or upgrading to a club level membership and getting access to the Discord server. All right. Dark Guitars says, I keep seeing Kubiak for head coach next year. Thoughts? He should be. He should be in the conversation. we'll find out if he winds up. We'll find out if he winds up getting and taking a job. I think a lot depends on how things play out for the Seahawks the rest of the year. Not just win loss, but also offensive line, you know, on offensive like play calling and how Sam Darnold plays. But I think the bigger concern is just if he were to go, how many coaches would he take with him? You know, he brought all his coaches from New Orleans here. Would he take all those guys with him? That would be a big blow. So, but at the same time, Mike McDonald now has proven that he can find the coach that has the offensive philosophy he wants and made a good hire. So I don't think about if Mike McDonald really is the Sean McVay of defense. Sean McVay has made a number of great hires on defense. Now let's see if Mike McDonald, if need be, can make good hires on offense repeatedly if he has to do that. We don't know. We'll find out. Jeff Feeblecorn says, oh, he becomes a new member. Well, welcome to the party, man. Appreciate having you, Jeff. 44 Forest, who's been a member for a very long time, 16 months, says, go Hawks. I sent a super chat on another platform. All right, let me make sure. Probably on Venmo. Let me get Venmo up. I've made this way more complicated for myself, but I do really appreciate people that take the time to do the Venmo, given that Google does not get to take 30% of those super chats. But I appreciate people that don't do any super chats or people that do them here. It doesn't really matter to me. All right. So I see a couple of super chats on here. So let me get to these. There's one from Bob Thomas who says, for your great content, I'll be at the Atlanta game. I'd love to connect, buy you a drink and celebrate. Well, that was very nice. Sorry we couldn't do that. It's very hectic for me when I'm there. I think I saw Smokehawk, which was cool. It's nice to meet Smokehawk, but that was about it. And Smokehawk gave me a nice gift, which was very nice of him. And I met Dakota as well, which was cool. Joey Hamilton, just watched Julian's Walter Payton Award press conference and immediately fell in love with his genuine, heartfelt, generous nature. Who else on this team would you say deserves more recognition for their attitude and community service? I think AJ Barner is pretty high up on that list. I think Uchenna Nwosu is really high on that list, and people probably don't know that. Very, very involved in the community and a really good dude. All right, now we'll get to Forrest. I am a 24-year-old Army vet, Seahawks diehard, looking to buy a single ticket to Seahawks Rams. I've reached out on HB Ticks with no reply. My ex is Forrest_Luke_. Would love a shout out if you can. Well, you got it, Forrest. Appreciate you. I hope you're able to get a ticket to that game. Who knows? If we get to 30,000 subs, maybe I can get you a ticket to that game. We will find out as we go along. Brent Yoendo. Well said, Brian. My first jersey is a woolen one. Interesting. Doesn't make sense to do anything but cheer for our dudes like they do for each other. We'll be wearing said jersey at the Rams rematch. Wouldn't it be awesome for this to go full circle where Sam Darnold has a amazing game against the Rams and Reek Woolen has an amazing game against the 49ers? Wouldn't that be awesome just to kind of like check every box? Because this has been kind of a check every box kind of season, right? Like, that's part of what I think has been, I don't know if it's an issue, but different is there haven't been these things for us to like worry about and like, oh my God, why did they lose that game? Or why can't they do this? There's been these little niggly things like, oh, I wish they were rushing for 175 yards instead of 125 yards. Or I wish they, you know, it wasn't 6-6 at halftime of that 37-9 win. I wish they had started faster. Like, darn, you know, stuff like that, but there's not a lot of stuff to worry about. So I think it'd be really cool for Darnold and Woolen to be heroes as they've had some goat moments this season. Detail-oriented Bobby. Hello, Bobby. Says, Brian, I know it's early. Seriously, though, I see potential for the defense to be even better than the LOB defense. Seriously, that alone should be exciting for this fan base. Go Hawks. I mean, I'm hesitant to make that claim because that defense, literally, I've done statistical comparisons with the best defenses in the history of the sport, accounting for, you know, era and differences. That is literally one of the top 2 to 3 defenses in the history of the NFL. There's 5 Hall of Famers, probably at least, on that defense. This defense isn't even leading the NFL in points allowed yet. It's not leading the NFL in yards allowed. And like, that defense led the NFL for 4 straight seasons in points allowed. I mean, like, they were, I don't know. I'm not ready to go there yet. What I will say, Bobby, is this defense belongs in the conversation for best defenses in Seahawks history. And I don't know if there's any other defense other than the LOB that should start above them. So yeah, I think this, and the cool thing is, and maybe this is part of what you're getting at, is I think they're getting better. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in a bit. Prunes Parlor says Josh needs to do a new hype video that would help pump up the fan morale. Came here for Cable Thanos videos, stayed for Hot Talk. Yeah, we have talked to Josh. Josh is in the camp of, I mean, he's like, if I made another video, Sam Darnold would throw 10 interceptions. I just know it. And these videos take a lot of work for him. So I think, like, the reality is, no matter what I say, whatever happens Sunday, nothing will change Seahawks fans' true feelings about this team until they play the Rams on Thursday night. And even then, I guarantee you, if they win that game and Matt Stafford plays a bad game, or it's raining and so the elements are really bad, or people will come up with some reason to say, but, or if, or, you know, still kind of wait. I feel like people are not going to truly get all the way into, like, onto the ride until they win a playoff game. And like, if the team wins the number one overall seed and they have home field throughout, which, by the way, all they have to do now that the Bears lost, all they have to do is win their final 4 games, then maybe that'll help. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. We will see. Maybe we'll get Cable. I will make sure, you know, we harass Josh and get him to do something if they get to the point where we're all the way in. All right. Noah Berman, who's been a member for 20 months, unbelievable, says, how do you think we keep Sam comfortable so that we get the second half versus Falcons rather than the first half against the Rams and other top teams? I mean, I'll say what I said in my morning after column that I wrote, which is, part of it is Clint Kubiak's responsibility. The interception yesterday came on a 3rd and 1. Like, why are you passing the ball there? Why are you putting the ball in harm's way? Why are you putting it on Sam's shoulders instead of reducing the load on your quarterback? How much better would he and everyone else feel if he had no interceptions from the game yesterday and no turnovers? And I put that interception as much on Clint Kubiak as I do on Sam Darnold. So I do feel like there still is this reticence with Clint Kubiak to go all the way in on the run game. The run game was doing really well yesterday. Zach Charbonnet had like another explosive run up the middle. And initially, like, Ken Walker was getting some success up the middle. Like, there was some production in the run game. They're averaging over 6 yards a carry in the first half, but they passed the ball significantly more than they ran it. I think Clint Kubiak can help with that. But really what has to happen is the game plan has to be better. I think Sam clearly, like, an under-discussed part of this is, I think Sam was not prepared for the disguises that the Rams brought out on defense. That's as much the coaches as it is him. It also took a while for Clint Kubiak to kind of figure something out that would work. They were slow to start in that game, and they really struggled in the red zone. So I do put a fair amount of this on the shoulders of the coaching staff and Clint Kubiak in particular to help put Sam in position to succeed, because guess what? That is the job. Like, that is the job of any coach. If you ask them what their job is, it is to put their players in good positions and to succeed. And so if Sam is throwing four picks in a game or really struggling early, I think most likely that has to do with how he was set up for that game. So that would be the big thing I would look at. And you know, it would help as well on defense next time they play the Rams to not give up, you know, 14 points early. Yes, I know they were dealing with some short fields and stuff like that, but they also gave up a number of fourth down conversions and some explosive running plays. And it made that game a little bit, you know, more challenging. So I think there's all sides that can help make it more comfortable for Sam. Hawk Scoot's been a member for 14 months, says, is there a world where we pay Kubiak $5 to $6 million a year to keep him? I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be money. I don't know if in his heart, he's like, I've always wanted to be a head coach. I'm going to take the first opportunity I get. There's no money that's going to change that. If he is on the fence and he doesn't want to move his family, but he does know it's, you know, a rare opportunity, money could help. So we'll see. We'll see. Certified Galil has become a member. Welcome to the crew. And then Nitsu J Trigger says, going to Seattle for my second home game ever. Are there any places I should go to for pre and post game? You know, I think there's some better places that start opening around the stadium. The place, where is it? I think it's called Hatback. Where the old pyramid. Let's see if I can find the old Pyramid Ale House is now the Hatback. That's a nice large spot close to the stadium. Wouldn't mind if I was going to my first game going there. But yeah, I don't go around to a bunch of different spots. We kind of have our spots that we go to, and I'm not going to tell you where those are because my pregame is kind of for me and private with my friends. So some people have found us there, and that's great, but I'm not going to promote that because I do like to have my time, you know, off the clock, so to speak, if that makes sense. Hopefully that everyone understands that. All right, last thing from a super chat, then we'll get back to just some thoughts on this game. Run up the trees says, Eamon Worry had one sack, one field goal block, one interception. Is that like getting a triple double in the NFL? I don't think so. Triple doubles are way more common. Finn, enough, man. God, Finn's annoying. I know you guys, I love Finn. Finn drives me crazy when he's in the house. So triple doubles happen all the time. What the Seahawks rookie did yesterday is the first time a rookie's ever done that in the history of the sport. It's also only been done by a handful of players ever. And I can't even confirm if there are any other players because there's not a good way to search for field goal blocks. I think the only other player that has another line like that is Leonard Williams, but he blocked an extra point. So yeah, it was incredibly rare what he did yesterday. And by the way, defense player of the year odds are closing. Carson Schwechter, the linebacker for the Browns, is still absolutely the favorite, but Nick has closed that distance quite a bit. And this stretch where he's going to be on national TV against big teams and big games, he can make up that ground. And I did not know that until I looked it up this morning. The Seahawks have never had a defensive rookie of the year. I mean, Tariq Woolen didn't win it. Richard Sherman didn't win it. Bobby Wagner didn't win it. You can kind of go through the list. Cortez Kennedy didn't win it. He was, I think, the defensive player of the year, maybe the next year or something like that. But they've never had a defensive rookie of the year. So, yeah, that would be amazing. Someone said Kenny Easley. No, at least based on what I read this morning, this was a list of all defensive rookie of the year. winners. I mean, there's no Seahawks listed all the way into the 80s. Kenny Easley was he a 1984 rookie? I think he was. When was his rookie year? So he was defensive player of the year in 1984. He was drafted in 1981. The 1981 rookie of the year, defensive rookie of the year, was Lawrence Taylor. That's tough company. That's tough to beat. So yeah, I mean, there's no Seahawks on this list. I'm looking at it again. There's no Seahawks on this list. So there's a chance. There's a chance. That's a good segue into talking about this defense. So part of what is really cool, and if you're paying attention, I mean, no, I don't know if anyone's paying as close of attention as me, because I'm like so crazy of doing all this coverage that I do and hanging out with all of you to do it. But I told you when I could feel there's progress in the Seahawks run game, and it wasn't showing up big time on the box score, but then it started to slowly make more and more, and the coaches are feeling more comfortable talking about it. If you can't feel it, the defense is getting better. And you might be like, well, they're amazing. That's not a really big thing to say. Why are you like acting like it's some secret? Well, the Seahawks defense has been amazing all year. So it's like trying to judge the difference between one Hawaiian sunset and another. Like, they're all amazing, but there is some increased rigor and like tuning that's happened with this defense. It's less leaky. The tackling has gotten better. People have forgotten there were some missed tackle problems with this defense early in the year. The chemistry between Devin Witherspoon and Nicky Minwori being on the field at the same time and being on opposite sides and kind of getting a feel for how to toy with offenses has improved. The linebacker play, Ernest Jones getting back and being in the middle of that. Drake Thomas settling in as the starter. By the way, Tyrese Knight was electric when he came in yesterday. He is so good. I know there can only be one starter, right? But I can't help but feel like Tyrese Knight's got a lot more to give when he gets his next opportunity. But setting that aside, Tariq Woolen, when's the last time he made a truly boneheaded play? Now you can say, well, the taunting penalty yesterday. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about misplaying a ball in the air, like in the first game of the season, or blown coverage, or a terrible missed tackle. Part of what got lost in the game yesterday is he made two physical tackles. Those were great tackles. The play where he got the taunting penalty was a damn good play. Josh Jobe, been playing solid, you know, doing his deal. Kobe Bryant, doing his deal. The edge players, all playing like a high level. The defensive tackles have just always been good. The run defense is solid. Like, there are fewer and fewer and fewer places and ways to attack this defense. And there are more reasons to fear it. And so when you've got, I've said this before, it's just kind of a philosophy I have or an observation I've made over the years. The team that has the best single side of the ball in the NFL often is the Super Bowl winner. It is whether it's the Seahawks defense in 2013 was a better side of the ball than the Broncos offense in 2013. Whether it's all the Chiefs offenses that we've seen with Patrick Mahomes, or you know, the Eagles defense last year, I think was the best side of the ball. You could argue maybe the Eagles offensive line was the best unit in the NFL. So that's another way to look at it. But the Seahawks defense is in the running for the best single side of the ball in the NFL. I think the Rams offense is probably the one that is most in competition for them, which is fitting. But that group everyone's getting, it's really get really excited about the Rams putting up 45 and, you know, how glorious they are. And I get it. They are very good. But the Seahawks defense is also playing really, really well. And so that's just great news. And for them to be getting healthier, knock on every piece of wood, but like getting Julian Love back, super underrated part of that game yesterday, was not a huge necessarily game-changing moment, but it was a deep pass. And Julian Love, unbelievable coverage, like 9 out of 10, 99 out of 100 defensive backs, especially safeties, in the same situation where you get to the player before the ball arrives, they make contact in some way that causes a DPI. It just always happens. Julian was so aware of the situation and so smart about how to position himself that was not DPI, but also made that catch impossible. It was like one of the headiest plays I've seen all season. So you add Julian Love back in, you add Jaron Reed back in. Let's go. Like, let's go. And by the way, it's not just the defense that's getting stronger. You're going to talk about adding Eric Saubert back in. And Eric Saubert's a good addition to this team. He was one of their best pass protectors at tight end when he was in there. I think the 12 personnel was best when he was around. And then you're going to, we talked about Jalen Sundell, where he fits. I think for all we know, as much as I defend the fact that Anthony Bradford is not as bad as his low light reels, and it's not as easy to upgrade, just having, if Jalen Sundell can manage to not be somebody who's overpowered and has like really glaring problems, he could all of a sudden make the Seahawks offense could be way better. Like if let's say, like, let's dream for a second that he is a big upgrade and that the run game gets better or the pass protection gets better. That is the biggest weak spot on this team. Like, as much as I defend Anthony Bradford, he has had some really challenging aspects of how he's played. And I don't think there's a single other position on this entire team, partially because it's so good that you could say, oh yeah, that position's struggling. So that's possible. And then Torrey Horton, he will be eligible to come back for the Rams game. I don't know that they will bring him back on short rest or like on a short week, I should say, but he will be eligible to come back. I don't know how they're going to work with all these receivers they got, but there's a lot of gaining momentum and gaining strength going on right now at just the right time. So I love that. I love that that's going on for the Seahawks. And I'll also just say, I mean, I joked about the weather at the jump. It's supposed to rain. There's two atmospheric rivers coming in. It's supposed to rain all through this week, pretty much all through next week. I do want to know how the Rams hold up in that weather. And one of the things that could be a deciding factor is if they aren't the same team in the weather and the Seahawks beat them and then the Seahawks get home field, it's a pretty big deal. So it's another thing. But getting back to the defense, I think we're seeing some really amazing plays from amazing players. Devin Witherspoon's playing, I think, the best football he's played in his career. And the interesting thing with Nicky Minwori is there's these massive debates going on, right? Like, oh my God, his PFF grade was low. PFF sucks. PFF can suck. I don't care if people like it or not. But if you go back and watch, Nick made some pretty big mistakes in coverage. Like he did. He gave up some plays. And they were explosive plays. And so whether you think he deserves the PFF grade he got or not, that's not as important. But he's still growing, he's still learning, and he's still making some errors, but he also is so damn talented that he makes enough impact winning plays that it erases, you know, 3-4 mistakes that he might make in a game. So I think that's all great. I think that I'm a little we need that defensive line to be more impactful than they've been the last few games. And so hopefully, like, it would be great if they could eat on Sunday early, get a rest, and then be ready to absolutely slaughter on Thursday, because the Rams offensive line is excellent. And we felt the pressure in that first game against the Rams, but you want to see the Seahawks get home more, cause more disruption, cause more turnovers. If the Panthers can do it, the Seahawks can. So all of those pieces kind of fit in. I thought we had another super chat. We don't, which is fine. Let me see if there's other things. I could share a few of the stats that I pulled out this morning and last night. One of them was kind of interesting. So here, I'm going to share my screen. And let's do this. Boo-boo-boo. Share screen. And we're going to share. I'll just share the window. Let's do this. Share that. And then I'm going to switch it to, That's why I wasn't showing up. All right, hold on, folks. We'll get there for you. There's a few numbers that I thought were interesting and worth talking about. By the way, more to this point of what I was saying at the beginning about, like, guys, you're not going to generally find a better team to get behind. Aaron Schatz, who does DVOA, has the Seahawks as the, what is it, third, sixth, the eighth best team through 13 games in the history of DVOA and the history of, NFL. Eighth. The teams that are better, like the 2007 Patriots that were undefeated, the Doug Williams, Redskins in the 90s, the 85 Bears, Denver Broncos 98 when they won the Super Bowl with John Elway, the 2023 49ers who lost in the Super Bowl but were a very, very good team, the 2012 Patriots, can't remember if they made it or not, and the 1995 Dallas Cowboys who won a Super Bowl. So pretty much all Super Bowl winners ahead of the Seahawks. That's how good they are. That feels meaningful. All right. So let me bring up what I was planning to share and let me. All right. We'll do this one at a time. All right. So I got to get this in a way that I can talk and look. All right. So let's pull this up. All right. So here is one that I liked, which was, this is a next gen stat from the NFL. Remember that last week it was like, oh, the Vikings blitzed the hell out of Sam Darnold and the Seahawks didn't know how to handle it. Everyone's going to do that to him. Well, the Falcons blitz almost as much as the Vikings. And guess what? They did. They blitzed. How did Sam do against the blitz? And this is specifically against man blitzes. He was 6 for 8. 75 yards, 3 touchdowns, and yes, one of the interceptions. His 8.3 EPA against the blitz was his season best and the 9th best of any quarterback in football this year against man blitzes. That's pretty good. So maybe it isn't so easy just to blitz the Seahawks and blitz Sam Darnold and win a game. Let's look at the next one. I can't just scroll through them. That's too bad. That's lame. Here's one. That is not Jackson Smith and Jigba in the picture, by the way, which is funny. he's had 11 games with 90 plus receiving yards in 2025. Justin Jefferson is the only other player under 24 that has achieved that. So amazing stuff from JSN. Tom Brady is the only quarterback to have won 10 games in consecutive seasons with two different teams until Sam Darnold just did it. Pretty good company. This one I love. The Seahawks offense has had 4 30-point halves this season. 4 30-point halves this season. The only team since 2000 with more than that is the 2013 Broncos. They had 6. That was a historic offense. Now, they did lose the Super Bowl, and everyone's like, oh, but remember, they lost the Super Bowl. Like, is anyone really going to tell me that if the Seahawks make the Super Bowl and lose, that it's like a bad year? Like, I don't want a Super Bowl loss, but I'll take it over what we've been doing the last few years. This was the pass block stuff I had for Anthony Bradford, which, again, I'm not hiding from it. Look how bad that grade is in weeks 1 through 8. That's not like one game. That's 8 weeks of the season. And he was 56th out of, I think, 58 or 57 in pass blocking grade since week 9, which is not just one game. That's a fair number of games. He's up to 23rd in pass block grade. 70.8 is an above average starter's grade. And over the last 2 weeks, that's only 2 week sample, but he's the third highest graded guard in pass block. So do I think that's going to continue? No, I don't think he is the third best pass blocking guard, but the trend is undeniable that it's better. And this is actually all of his grades. I think there's a mistake in week 8 potentially, because I don't think they had a game that week, but everyone's like, oh, look, almost all of his grades are crap. My eyes go to look how bad he was here, at least by PFF grading. And then look at 4 of the last 6 games have been very good from pass blocking. And 2 of them, they're not great, but they're not catastrophic. Like 45 is not great. 51 in this era of guards, not terrible, honestly, as a pass blocking grade. These were the top grades on defense for the Seahawks from PFF. Devin Witherspoon with a 95 grade. That is like a week after, I think, Ernest Jones had a 95.5, something like that. Unbelievable grade from Devin Witherspoon. Tyrese Knight, as I said, PFF liked his game as well. He had a 90.5. He only had 13 snaps, but was very good. Drake Thomas, great again. Derek Hall, Boye Mafe, Tariq Woolen. Julian Love did fine. Josh Job, DeMarcus Lawrence. Nicky Mewari did not get one of the top grades. We can all just agree he had a great game, no matter what the grade is. These are the top offensive PFF grades. Nick Kallerup, 79.7 grade and 80.4 run block grade. Rashid Shaheed, 77 grade. I will say I was pretty consistent. If you listen, I have not been worried about Rashid Shaheed's lack of production. I must have said it 10 times last week. He's too good. He is fine. And it's just a matter of time before he starts getting where he's going. Jackson Smith and Jigba had a 73.6 grade. Sam Darnold ended up with a 72.9. Gray Zabel, one of his best grades, 72.8 with an 82.5 pass block grade. Cody White, 70.8 grade. And then you get the rest there. Charles Cross had a 62.8 grade, had a very bad pass blocking day, but had an 87.2 run block grade. So that was cool to see. This was actually a look at the starting offensive line. And I just want to make sure this is all still coming through. You see Anthony Bradford gave up no sacks, no hits, no hurries. Gray Zabel, no sacks, no hits, no hurries. That's pretty good for your two guards. Abe Lucas, no sacks, no hits, 2 hurries. Charles Cross, as we said, had a bad game pass protection-wise, 28.1, gave up a sack, 2 hurries. Olu gave up 2 hurries. All right, so that's your offensive line. I also mentioned, I think the Seahawks are still number 1 overall in DVOA. Obviously said they are one of the best ever at this point in the season. They also now on defense have the triple crown. They are the number 1 overall defense. They are the number 1 passing defense. They are the number 1 rushing defense. They are also the second best special teams. Even after that week, they're still second best. Offense is 8th, passing offense 3rd, rushing offense 23rd. All right, so I think there are a couple other things in here. This was me yesterday, the Nicky Mewari, first rookie in history to have 1+ interception, sack, block, field goal, tackle, 2 tackles for loss. The Seahawks are second in the NFL in points scored, second in the NFL in points allowed. That is outstanding. And then here was the last one I'll show you. The always fun point differential. Seahawks lead the entire NFL in point differential. Still above the Rams, even after they won as big as they did against the Cardinals. And there's a big drop-off from the Rams and the Seahawks to the next group, which is the Patriots and the Colts and the Lions, the Bills, the Packers, the Texans, the Broncos, and the Chiefs. So I think all in all, pretty good times, you know, pretty good times. And I'll be joining the Mike McDonald press conference here a little bit later. And I got some questions for him. We'll find out if there's any news about Jalen Sundell, if there's any news about other players. But all in all, you know, I think this was a taking care of business kind of day. They did it. Wasn't an easy place to get started, but they finished. And the Seahawks are 10-3. So let's get after it this week. Let's get 11 wins, and then let's get the 12th. You get that 12th win, it's going to be like a boulder going down a Mount Rainier. It's going to pick up steam. So these next two games, they're big. Let's get them. All right, folks. That will do it for this episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Have a great rest of your day. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning with Matt Hasselback. We'll figure out when we're going to do a real Hawk Talk this week. And from there, all the other stuff we will do. I got a lot of stuff going on this week, but I will do my best to keep us all connected. Take care. Have a great rest of your day.